meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and also the DeNicholas Center for Culture and Ethics at the University of Notre Dame. And it is my privilege to be sitting in, as I do most Mondays, for Father Anthony. And I know that all of you are continuing to keep him in your thoughts and your prayers as he continues to work through some health challenges, as you all know. So thank you for Father Anthony for this ongoing opportunity to be with you and his listeners, who are very loyal to this show. Hope you all had a good weekend. I had a big milestone in mine this weekend. I took my eldest daughter off to college. She is now a freshman, a class of 2023. At the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon, which I had not heard of prior to her applying there and then getting a very generous scholarship that we were very grateful for. As a family, God's providence truly manifested itself. She's going to be pre-med and a psychiatry major there. And the University of Portland is a smaller Catholic school. It's run by the Congregation of the Holy Cross, which is the same order that everyone knows because it runs the University of Notre Dame. And my husband's an alum of the University of Notre Dame. So it was interesting when we arrived there on the campus, my husband was remarking how much the campus reminded him of his early days at the University of Notre Dame. Notre Dame's really expanded in the last 30 or 40 years, and so there's many new buildings that did not exist when he was an undergraduate student there, but it is really very much reminiscent of it, except it has kind of a, you know, Pacific Northwest feel to it. You know, obviously the Native American population was very much part of the founding of the city of Portland, the port of Portland, and the city there, and it overlooks the Willamette River. And so it's quite beautiful. The university itself, they call it the Bluff because it sits up on quite a high bluff overlooking the Willamette River. And, you know, we had laid out some hopes for our daughter when she was applying to colleges. We told her we really wanted it to be a Catholic school, and we wanted her to be in single-sex dorms because I think that it's girls learn better and boys learn better and live better when they don't need to worry about somebody else walking in on them in the shower. You know, it's interesting. I have a friend whose son just went off to his sophomore year at the University of Pennsylvania at Penn and was actually assigned a female roommate. And so he pulled out of the dorm that he was in and put his name back into the general pool because has nothing against women. In fact, he likes them very much, but did not want to have to share his small dorm suite with another woman. He just didn't think that was appropriate for either of them. And but that's sort of the world that we're living in right now with higher education. And so we were very grateful. My daughter is a very nice roommate from Houston, Texas. She's really one of the few kids from the Midwest that's out at the University of Portland, surprisingly, and many kids from Hawaii. We met lots of families from Hawaii, and I've learned that's the correct way to spell it as well, Hawaii, and because there's only three colleges and universities on the islands in Hawaii, so they often send their children to the mainland, as they call it, for school. So lots of kids from California and Hawaii and Washington State and Texas and Nevada and Wyoming. But not so much from the Midwest. There was a nice young man from Wisconsin and a lovely young lady from Michigan and my daughter who's from the Chicago area. So it was, like I said, a big milestone. But what I was most grateful for was how much the Catholic identity is so evident at the University of Portland. And it was really wonderful to see it. Every dorm, as would be the case at the University of Notre Dame, every dorm has what they call a rector, which is akin to a chaplain, who lives in the dorm with the students. And there is a weekly dorm mass. In my daughter's case, it'll be on Tuesday evening. So it's not to take place of the Sunday mass. The weekly dorm mass is a community mass that the kids come together and pray. There's that particular piece of it. So the Congregation of the Holy Cross in their higher education ministry, which is one of their great ministries, really, they live among the students. They don't just provide, spiritual direction and mass and the sacraments for the students, but they actually live among them to do, to do residence hall masses, to do Eucharistic adoration, to do offer confessions. So there's all sorts of resources for spiritual development and spiritual growth and spiritual mentorship, also vocational discernment. There was a wonderful young lady who, from my daughter's dorm, joined the Daughters of St. Paul last year. And so it was really great to see that her, her vocation was encouraged and supported. And so we're really excited for my daughter. We were at first very nervous to send her so far away, but now we're really grateful that she is, I think, in a very safe place spiritually. Now, of course, Portland being Portland, there's that whole moniker for the city of Port, keep Portland weird. And Portland's very proud of its weirdness. Marijuana's legal. So you do see quite a few homeless people who essentially just sort of live in camps. And, you can smell marijuana when you're in certain neighborhoods. People can just, sit and smoke it in the same way they would have a beer or have a glass of wine in public. You can smoke marijuana. So unfortunately, when marijuana is legalized in some communities, it leads to an increase in the homeless population. So, and I'll be talking to my guest about that a little bit later in the show. I'm going to be having on former Lake County Sheriff Mark Curran, and it's going to be good to be able to talk to him about the upcoming legalization of marijuana in Illinois and what that might mean for an increase in our homeless population, but also an increase in potential crime. I know that one of the arguments made for legalizing pot is that, police won't be tied up with all of this nonsense of having to arrest people for, possessing small amounts of marijuana. But at any rate, he's going to be joining us soon. And so I'm going to go to my first break now. And when we come back, we'll have Sheriff Mark Curran with us. And we'll be able to take your questions. If you can go to my Twitter feed at Mary Fiorito or to my Facebook page, you're welcome to post a question for Sheriff Curran if you have anything you'd like to ask him. Former Sheriff Curran, he certainly has tremendous insight and knowledge into some of the aspects of prosecuting and also in a just prosecution, which is one of the things I like about Sheriff Curran. Very interested in the well-being of the inmates at Lake County Jail. He really approached that whole job very holistically. So please don't go away. Again, Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just two blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org and enter into the presence of Christ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
And welcome back. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I am so grateful to you for tuning in and being with us for this hour, and also as well for, of course, keeping Father Anthony in your thoughts and your prayers as he battles with some health issues. And as I mentioned before we went to the break, I am so grateful to have in studio today former Lake County Sheriff Mark Curran, who is going to be announcing a campaign bid to take on Senator Dick Durbin in the Illinois Senate race. Sheriff Curran, welcome. Do I call you Sheriff? I know you're no longer in that position, you know, but you get to hold the title, correct?
Yes, you do, exactly.
That's wonderful.
So I do.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks a bunch. Boy. I appreciate your having me.
Sure. Hard fought last election.
So I've
already
announced,
huh?
Really.
Yeah. You have the announcement. Yeah. You're announcing it for the first time on the show.
Right.
Because
exactly.
You're a friend of the show. You've been
Thank
on before.
Thank you. Yes.
Grateful
yes.
to have you back again. So, Kit, let's start with, you know, because you had a really, really tight election last time and lost by how many votes?
137.
137 votes. That was after a recount, correct?
Right.
And so when people say, you know, gosh, it won't make much of a difference if I don't show up to the polls, a race that is close as yours, absolutely proof positive, you got to go. You know, it doesn't mean much if you don't go out and you don't show up.
Right, exactly. You know, I just think of Mother Teresa. She always said that we're called to do the right thing and not worry about, you know, the results.
The results,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
we vote regardless.
Right, 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 right. And so, well, thank you for, you know, your many years of service. I know you were held in such high regard by a lot of people in law enforcement. And you were, because, you know, the thing, I just mentioned it before I went to the break, Mark, that, you know, what I always really appreciated about your approach is you had a very holistic approach to treating the inmates that were under your care. And I remember when Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson, down the dial at 5:60 a.m., broadcast live, and they interviewed a couple of the inmates. And they talked with such, you know, affection for you, because I think they knew that deep down you cared about them as people. They weren't just convicts. They weren't just inmates. They weren't just numbers. They were human beings. And can you talk a little bit about what that, now that you're out of the job, you know, what that felt like when you had those souls entrusted to you?
Yeah, you know, I think it's prayer where you have to begin. And in the Gospel of Matthew, it says, I was in prison and you visited me. And what does that mean? And what is our role? And you know, that clearly illustrates what our final judgment may look like.
Okay.
You know.
But for you, it was like really literal, right? The whole visiting the imprisoned,
right,
you know, for
right.
you, it takes on a whole new dimension in that job that you had.
Yeah. You know, maybe it's like part of being Irish or what have you, but I kind of I'm not really good with a lot of compliments, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think I'm like a lot of people.
Well, but you should accept acknowledgement for what you did
well.
Yeah, no,
I hear you.
And because, you know what, you see other people who have similar positions to yours, and I mean, God forgive me, I can't see those people's hearts.
Yeah.
I don't know. But to me, sometimes I feel like it's a means to an end. You know what I mean? That they're not in it in the same way that you were in it. And, you know, the position seems to be used as sort of a, you know, possible leg up on some other kind of political position or what have you. And again, I can't read someone else's mind and heart, and I'm not attempting to do that. But with you, I just always had the sense you genuinely cared about those people who were in your, you know, under your care.
Right. I think I did. And you know, our hearts are in a battle always, though. I mean, our hearts are hard at times. And
right.
Even, you know, my heart gets hard. So I'm not going to say that I was always completely in tune with the needs of the inmates. But I tried.
Yeah.
And the reality is that most of the people that are incarcerated are, you know, struggling with some form of an addiction and came from a broken home and probably did not have a lot of opportunities. Many of them don't have a father figure in their life.
Right.
And when you think of all of those things that fed into their winding up in the criminal justice system and being incarcerated, you think, but for the grace of God. So
right.
That's the reality. The other thing is I was a police officer. I mean, I was a sheriff for 12 years. I was a prosecutor, county, state, and federal, for longer than that. And I've seen, you know, all ends of the criminal justice system. I was a public defender for 4 years.
Right.
Represented murderers and rapists and what have you.
Yeah.
So I've really done it all. And there's no end that has a monopoly on goodness. And
okay.
There's no end that represents all the badness. So that's the reality. I mean, I've seen some police officers, and I don't mean to disparage the profession because it's a tough profession, and the vast majority are great, but I've seen some police officers that, you know, would rival the worst gangbanger in terms of
really?
Just, you know,
yeah, just
a level of evil
or,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and just the ability
yeah,
to
really
lie and everything else. So it's, you know, that's our system. We're all fallen, and I think it's prayer and grace that keeps us from going over the cliff. So
yeah.
If you don't have that, I've said that before, you know, if you're in law enforcement and you don't have a prayer life, you don't have something to center you, I mean, you could be a very dangerous human being since you have a gun and a badge and you have all that power that comes
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of room for corruption, isn't there?
Tons.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really...
I mean, that's what history is replete with that.
Yeah,
know?
that's really, very discouraging. But, you know, but also, it's also equally good to know that there's people like you out there. Now, you mentioned one thing I find really interesting, lack of fathers in the homes of a lot of the people that you encountered, either as a public defender or as the sheriff or as a police officer. Talk a little bit about that, how you think that impacts, you know, the lives, because there are some you talk to, for lack of a better adjective, on the left, who will say that that is shaming people of color and that it doesn't matter who you're raised by as long as there's love, right? I mean, we're hearing a lot of this with the redefinition of marriage, too, right? Doesn't matter if there's not a father in the home as long as a child is loved. Doesn't matter if there's not a mother. You know, mom and dads are interchangeable. The children, you know, for lack of a better phrase, don't deserve to have a mother and a father. That whatever, you know, variety of parenting whoever wants to come up with is fine. So can you speak to that about the importance of, and you're a father yourself of sons, the importance of a father in a young man's life?
Sure. So the statistics don't lie. And if you look at...
Well, that's very good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You look at, you know, the percentage of people that are incarcerated in this country that don't have a relationship with a father, and it's extremely high.
Yeah.
Way, way over 50%.
Well, I know
way
that,
over 75%.
Yeah, I've had my friend Pastor Cesar LaFleur on, who's a African-American pastor on the South Side, and he has, you know, he talks about this constantly in his own community, though he's very unpopular for doing so. He said the fact that we have a 73% out-of-wedlock birth rate in the Black community,
yeah.
in Chicago, he said it's disgraceful. And he said,
yeah.
And if nobody can tell me that it's not contributing to crime and to delinquency and to a whole host of other social problems in our city. So
right. So it's a single greatest common denominator in terms of people that are incarcerated. more so than any addiction, more so than any other factor, is the absence of a father in the house. So for those of us that are Catholic or those of us that are Christian or Judeo-Christian that believe in the concept of natural law, you know, is known independent of any text. It's the truths that we can know because of their nature. You know, nature's God.
Right.
We know that there's
right.
a God.
Nature and nature's God. Cardinal George always
right, exactly.
quoted that.
And so, you know, one of the components of natural law is human sexuality. And, you know, men have certain anatomy, women have the other anatomy. And as a result of that, children are brought into the world. And other than, you know, trying to contrive things and play God and all this other business, that's really the only way that children could be created, and that was the only way they were created up until very recently.
Right.
And that in God in his infinite wisdom knew that there should be a mother and a father and that they are equal in dignity but different in gifts and that they complement each other.
Right.
So boys need a father figure. That's clearly a critical factor in terms of why they wind up incarcerated. And if
now,
you
just
look
a
at,
father figure. So I mean,
why
I appreciate
say a father,
right?
So I said a father figure, but you know, ultimately a father, but a father figure
will also
know,
perhaps
right,
right
can step in and you know help to some degree. But if they don't have that, they're going to gravitate towards that older male approval.
Right.
And oftentimes that's why they wind up in street gangs and what have you. That's where they get what, you know, the approval of older males.
Right.
And, you know, they run amok. And boys are, you know, especially younger ages, high testosterone levels,
right.
hardwired for craziness. And it's a dad and the firmness of a dad that's able to keep them on track and
there
rein them
to be,
in.
Right, like an right. actual male in the household to curb young male aggression.
Right.
And it's simply a natural part of their development to want to assert themselves, to want
exactly.
to push boundaries. And, you know, there was another study. I have all daughters, but my husband
yeah.
is one of five boys. So, you know, we're often talking about the difference growing up in his house with five boys and the all, even our dog is a girl. So we really have an all female house. So there's a lot of drama. My husband said,
right.
you know, when he would argue with one of his brothers, you know, just essentially somebody would punch the other person and then it would be over. Like my girls, if they're arguing, can go on for a week, you know?
Right.
And so, he doesn't understand the differences in arguing between, you know, siblings in that way. But young women who grow up in a house without their biological father will mature more quickly and will begin menstruating more quickly, younger, at younger and younger ages. And then, you know, you see this is also a part of the teenage pregnancy problem is you have girls who will attain physical maturity more quickly if that biological father is not in the home with them. I mean, the science behind it is really fascinating. And then they will gravitate towards older men in terms of establishing their first relationships. So it's... you know, which of course then would lead to a higher teen pregnancy rate. And then the cycle just repeats itself, right? So,
exactly.
So there's a lot of just biological information. Even in the New York Times last week, there was a lengthy article on how men's bodies change when they become fathers, if they're living in the home with their children. Men's body, the testosterone level drops. There's different biological changes, different brain changes in the body of the male when he moves from being, you know, the single young man who's the aggressor to being a provider and a protector. There's actual biological changes. So, you know, you just think about how, my goodness, we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and God does create that family unit just even biologically for certain reasons.
I agree. Absolutely. So, you know, ultimately, getting back to natural law, I mean, you know, there is a God and that he has a purpose for our lives. And, you know, the purpose with men and women is different. And we've basically taken that natural law and thrown it in the garbage and
right.
decided that we're all God and that we're all going to pursue worldly pleasures. And as a result of that, you know, there's just chaos going on in the world. And we need to get back to natural law. The founding fathers understood it. That's why they referenced it right at the beginning of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was something that was widely accepted. And now it's just... We're living in utter chaos in terms of the world
right.
and everything else, and that's because People don't have a natural law worldview.
Well, you know what this is? Well, this is so interesting because I kind of got into it on Twitter. I don't engage in a lot of, you know, back and forth with people on Twitter because it's a cesspool 95% of the time, frankly. And it's not, it really can get you sucked in. But with a couple of different lawyers who very much against the concept of a natural law, and even though I was citing people to them like, you know, Marianne Glendon and Professor Charles Rice from Notre Dame, when I cited his book on natural law, they attacked me because they said, you know, he's Catholic, and so therefore we can't take his viewpoint seriously. Marianne Glendon, who has the learned hand chair at Harvard's Law School, and then Professor Robert George at Princeton, then they started mocking me, saying Princeton...
Locke and Aristotle.
Right. It's like none of this, you know, I mean, really high-level legal thinkers. I mean, Robbie George was on the U.S. Commission for Human Rights, et cetera, and he's at Princeton now because Princeton doesn't have a law school. You know, so they were looking for all of these different ways that they could delegitimize the message of natural law. But, you know,
Do they believe in God?
Oh, you know, that I don't know. I would doubt these particular people. You know, see, this is the...
Do they explain the, you know, the intricate details of nature?
Well, there you go, right? I mean, it's interesting. I found you know, this book of quotes, and, you know, you can find these kind of just inspirational quotes from different people, and the number of them that reference science and God, I mean, really great thinkers who ultimately say, if you are going to look to the laws of science, it's always going to lead you back to God, to a creator.
Right, exactly. You know? So, you know, I oftentimes donate money to the Faith and Reason Institute.
Yes.
And exactly right. We're not afraid of science. We're not afraid of, you know, delving deep into the truths. And I think every time we've done so, we've learned more, but we've also learned more about God.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to talk to you about something just briefly before we go to the next break. So I started out the show by talking about my weekend because we had kind of a milestone in the family. I took my eldest daughter off to college. And
College?
She is going to the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, it's run by the Holy Cross Fathers who run the University of Notre Dame.
I think Terry Porter is the basketball coach there. We saw him down.
Yeah, and, you know, Megan Rapinoe went there, the U.S. women's soccer star, right?
I'm sorry,
so, yeah, that's kind of a downside for the university. But I have to tell you, Mark, I was so impressed by the Catholic identity.
Yeah.
There's a rector, a priest who lives in every dorm. There's a weekly mass for each of the dorms. The last thing the school did during orientation weekend, there was a Saturday night mass where essentially the parents turn over their children to the care of the university, and each child gets a blessed medallion to wear during their 4 years there. It was really...
But it's not a Catholic school, is it?
No, it is. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is.
The Holy
I'm
Cross.
Sorry.
Yeah, the Holy Cross Fathers run it.
I don't know why.
You know, I didn't either.
So same
order that
Notre
runs
Dame,
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
In fact, the priest who is the president there now was the rector at one of the dorms at Notre Dame when my husband was a student there. So it's very, the layout of the campus, as we were walking around, he was like, my gosh, this is like Notre Dame from the 70s. It's smaller than Notre Dame is.
Yeah.
It sits high up on a bluff and overlooks the Willamette River, and just a beautiful campus. But here's the interesting thing, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about. You're no longer the sheriff, but you certainly would have had a finger on this pulse. Marijuana's been legal there for several years.
Yeah.
So we went to see, there's a beautiful Servite shrine of Our Lady right near the hotel where we were staying. So we went to visit it, and like the number of tents of like homeless young people, you know, the whole kind of Antifa looking, you know, not wearing shirts, sitting out in their little tents, smoking pot, surrounding this shrine because the shrine has free bathrooms and free shower access. So that's where they camp. They kind of camp around these places where there's free, you know, access to toilets and things like that. And I have a friend who lives in Denver who told me that their homeless population, I think, went up by like 25% when they legalized marijuana. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. We're going to quickly go to a break. And when we come back from that, I'd love to hear your thoughts on where you think, now that Illinois is going to have, you know, legalized marijuana, what that might mean for people who are in positions that you used to hold for law enforcement.
Sure.
Because I'm sure it'll reduce the number of people you have to arrest for, you know, possessing small amounts of marijuana.
Right.
But I think other crimes are going to increase. But would love to get your impacts, or your take on the impact of this. So listeners, please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Will you say yes? Our Lady is looking for patrons. In 1999, the Blessed Mother asked the St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, open the doors. And so we did. St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish is now open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, providing all people a place of prayer, a quiet sanctuary from the noise of the world to adore the living God and hear his voice. In 2007, Francis Cardinal George designated St. Stanislaus Kostka the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy for Chicago. Since that time, we have been faithful to the call to be a place of spiritual sanctuary for those seeking God and his mercy. The cost of keeping our doors open 24 hours a day is considerable, to say nothing of the cost of maintaining this beautiful and historic church in the heart of Chicago. We are asking you to consider becoming a patron of the Blessed Mother, promising God and the Blessed Mother a weekly donation of $20 or more for at least 1 year to support the call to open the doors. As a patron, you will know that you have answered Our Lady's call to keep the doors open and be remembered at Patrons' Masses on the second Sunday of the month at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Will you accept Our Lady's invitation and join the patrons of the Blessed Mother? Go to ststandschurch.org, that's ststandschurch.org, and click on the Donations tab and click Patron on the drop-down. God bless you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ. And I am really thrilled to be joined this hour by one of my favorite people, Sheriff Mark Curran, who is the former sheriff of Lake County, Illinois, now candidate for senator for the U.S. Senate. And we were just getting into a little bit of a conversation kind of based on my weekend experience. I was out in Portland, Oregon to take my eldest daughter off to school to the University of Portland. And marijuana is legal. In fact, when you land at the airport, like the first billboards you'll see will be for marijuana delivery to your hotel, you know, where to buy pot. And so it's very much part of the economy now. And I think it's become sort of a tourist economy in that people will go to Oregon to get, you know, to get marijuana. So let me just ask you, could someone go, do you know, Mark, get the marijuana and then bring it back to their home state, or would be bringing it back to their home state be a violation if they're not buying it in Illinois, if they could buy it in another state?
Well, it would still violate federal law, but we don't know. We don't know what the federal government's going to do. They've kind of been silent on the whole thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
More and more states have ratified it.
Right.
But yeah, when I was sheriff, the whole marijuana issue started to heat up, and I took kind of a little bit of an unusual perspective. I was somebody that was in favor of decriminalization, and I didn't have any problem with decriminalization. I thought that we've expanded a lot of resources in terms of criminalizing marijuana over the years, and people have been locked up and what have you. And additionally, I mean, I'm 100% pro-life and would stand on that issue. Completely in defense of marriage, and would stand on that issue. Completely in the defense of liberty, is, you know, making sure that it's more than just freedom to worship, that it's actually freedom to religion. I believe in all those things. But by the same token, I'm somebody that's distrustful of the government.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I just, you know, I think that we, Big Brother looking over us all the time. I'm not a fan of that. And I have some libertarian streaks. And you know, with regards to marijuana, I didn't have any problems with decriminalizing it. But there's a big difference between decriminalizing it and legalizing it. By legalizing it, I think that you, in essence, say that it's fine, there's no problems with it. You know, you can smoke marijuana and there's really no harm. And we know that's not true.
Right.
We know that
right.
ultimately it's, you know, we're all worried about, I'm a cigar smoker, but, you know, we're all concerned about people smoking, you know.
Right.
It's much worse on your lungs than cigars.
Well, it's not just yours. Have you ever gone to the continuing legal education class that the Illinois Bar Association, the Assistance for Lawyers, the LAP program, the Lawyers Assistance Program offers? Have you ever done there? They have a really good ethics 6-hour. This is for those of you who are non-lawyers listening. Lawyers have to every 2 years file a report with the Illinois Registration and Disciplinary Commission that indicates that we've had a certain number of continuing education classes in law or something around surrounding law. And the Lawyers Assistance Program, the LAP, creates programs for lawyers who might be in distress from either drug abuse or alcoholism. The profession of attorney carries with it a very, very, very high rate of alcoholism. And so the LAP is there to privately and confidentially assist lawyers who are struggling with substance abuse. But I remember the marijuana addiction portion, and they showed PET scans of young male brains before they had smoked marijuana. And after they had smoked marijuana for a couple of years, and the damage to the frontal lobes, and it's permanent damage.
Right.
So it scared me to death.
Right. You know, and I subscribe to that. I was going in that direction, that ultimately marijuana is dangerous. And, you know, people like to analogize it to alcohol, but that's not, you know, far different. Marijuana leads to bipolar. It leads to all kinds of mental illnesses.
Right.
And, you know, it's really a dangerous substance. You know, it's, in terms of addiction, they'll tell you that there's no physical addiction. And that may be true, that, you know, that it's not like heroin or cocaine or a drug where your body is going to go into a state of, you know, DTs or some type of trembling or what have you if you don't have marijuana. None of that happens. But there is a psychological component in chasing that high, you know, that you've had it, you've achieved it, and then you miss it. And it's a depressant, and you see the people walk around, and, you know, I think there's already enough joy lacking in the world.
Right.
And, you know, you couple that with the fact that it's still very difficult to quantify. So what are we going to do about people when they get behind the wheel after they've been smoking marijuana? I think there's a lot of problems with that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So
how do you test for that?
Right.
I mean, there's alcohol, you know, sobriety link tests and all that sort of thing. But how do you test for it?
So even in the decriminalization, you know, the bill that I supported was a bill in terms of smaller amounts.
Okay.
So, you know.
Or it has to be combined with another crime. I mean, there's ways in which I can see how it was affecting law enforcement. Resources. Well,
I mean, even beyond that, I mean, you know, kids are going to experiment and what have you. I mean, do we really need to put them in the system because they did so? I mean, I really don't. I don't think
right,
so.
Right. Right. However, the impact that it has on the rest of the community.
Right.
You know, I do think has to be seriously considered.
Right. I talked to business owners up in Lake County, and you know, they don't want a workforce full of stoners. I mean, ultimately, you know, the GNP is not going to grow with a country that's full of marijuana addicts or people that are smoking marijuana all the time. So, you know, really, it's just one more move by our Illinois General Assembly that's devoid of natural law and devoid of morality and has a worldview.
You know, this is funny. I have a friend who's a supervisor at a university, and not in this state, in another state where marijuana is legal, and he said he can tell that some of the guys who report to him go out at lunchtime and they smoke pot. You know, in the same way you'd go out and have a drink at lunch, you know, three martini lunch used to be kind of a popular thing, but it's not. I mean, when I was working in an office and there was a social lunch, it would not be in common. We'd have a glass of wine with our lunch and go back to work. You can tell that some of these guys have been smoking, and they come back and they're high, and then their productivity goes way down for the rest of the afternoon. And, you know, but I guess that, like, what I really wanted to ask you about was, you know, I have friends who are very concerned about the increase in the homeless population due to the legalization of marijuana. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think that's part of this. Like, I have friends who live in Denver who said their homeless population has just astronomically increased. And I was mentioning in Portland, right? I saw the little tents all around the shrine, one of the shrines that the Servite Fathers run. where people are living. They go there to get pot, and then they just basically become homeless people. They live on welfare, and they have little tent cities.
Right. Yeah, you've seen it in San Francisco and Portland and Seattle, a lot of the West Coast cities, and you're exactly right. I mean, there's a drug culture, and the climates are mild enough that they can stay there. And,
Correct, right. Milder climates. And, that's part of it, too.
You know, it's all about the, you know, the high and the buzz and the disconnect from society. And you saw that, I think, you know, for those people out there that are a little bit younger, when we were in college, people smoked marijuana, and there was enough of them that we knew who was smoking marijuana on a regular basis. And but then none of them were really good students. I mean, that's just the reality. Is it kind of, it causes a disconnect where you don't really care so much about your grades or anything.
Yeah,
you're just
that's really scary.
Yeah, you're just kind of, you know, bouncing along and what have you. And so people that want to be successful in this world, productive, marijuana is not the answer. It's, you know, growing up is tough and being a young person is tough. And, you know, there's times that you want to, you know, kind of check out. But the right way to do it is not marijuana. That's really, really dangerous. And I'd even say, you know, if it comes to having a couple beers versus marijuana, go ahead and have the couple beers.
Yeah, the beer seems to cause less permanent brain damage. And that was the scary part to me, was seeing the permanence of the brain damage from the use of marijuana.
Sure.
That really troubled me.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the increase in the homeless population, which I think, my guess is going to lead to an increase in crime. I mean, what you know, if you were still in your position as a sheriff, what would you be doing? What would you be talking to your officers about right now? Like, how are we going to get ready for this?
Yeah, I mean, we have homeless population. I mean, it's, you know, I just walked past your church and there was, you know, they're feeding a bunch of people that I assume are homeless.
But they're not homeless because they've moved here to get pot.
Right, exactly.
There's a difference, you know?
Right. But, yeah, I think that... there's, Mary, we could go on for days.
Right,
there's so
about
many
this,
cultural
yeah.
issues.
Right.
And there's so much craziness going on. And really, you know what it is when we take morality out of the equation. And we vote for representatives that have no moral compass, that are just going to do whatever they want or, you know, wherever the wind blows. And that's where we're headed. And,
right.
You know.
Well, that's why I wanted to have you in. And thank you for letting us have a little bit of a extended conversation about some other things before we got into it. But we're going to go to our final break. And when we get back, I want to commit the rest of the show to your candidacy, to what you hope to do, and frankly, why you think you can beat Dick Durbin. This is going to be, I really want to hear.
Sure.
And listeners, this is a man who we would be proud to have in the U.S. Senate. You know, Dick Durbin is a professed Catholic, but has done some quite a few things that don't speak to his Catholic faith, and in fact are quite opposite. So please listen to Sheriff Curran when he returns, and prayerfully consider supporting him. And we'll get into a little bit of his candidacy when he gets when we get back. Please stay with us. This is Mary Fiorito filling in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
Welcome back. This hour is just flying by today, as it always does when I have a really interesting guest, which I do. Sheriff Mark Curran, the former sheriff of Lake County, who is now candidate Curran, has announced that he will seek the U.S. Senate seat of currently held by Richard Durbin. So, Mark, let's talk a little bit about what led to your decision to run for now national office. You've been, you know, certainly very successful in your career as Lake County Sheriff. What prompted you to throw your hat in the ring?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times there's providential things that happen. And, you know, for me, I was going to run for the 51st State House District.
Okay.
And we had lost that to a Democrat. Mary Helene Walsh had run, and she lost by 300 votes. But in that same cycle, those same precincts, I won by over 10,000.
Oh, wow.
So it was going to be a layup.
Yeah.
You know, I could have been state rep easy.
Okay.
Then, you know, there's a potential judgeship that was coming available, and I could have had that, you know, for my sub-circuit where I live. And so I looked at that. You know, it pays a lot of money, and it's not exactly the hardest job, to be honest with you.
And,
so,
and you're so familiar, having been a prosecutor,
right,
having been,
right,
having been
right,
the
right,
sheriff.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So I looked at that, and just nothing felt right.
Right.
And I share office space with Mark Shaw.
Okay.
So he's the co-chairman of the Illinois Republican Party with Tim Schneider.
Okay.
And he gives me office space in his law firm.
Okay.
So I'm sitting in his office one morning, and this is only, you know, a handful of weeks ago.
Okay.
And there's another guy from the party that was in there. And we're talking about some things. And I said, who do we have running for Senate? And they said, well, nobody good, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I looked up these people, and nobody had served in elected office. Nobody really, you know, knew how to run a campaign.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I just said to them, that's what I'm doing. I'm running for U.S. Senate.
Good for you.
And then once I got in, you know, I had always, like, toyed with a statewide run. You know, I looked at running for attorney general, and then I shut it down. But I felt like this was it, and it just felt right. And I'm in it to the extent right now that there's just no turning back. I mean, I don't care how the primary goes.
When is the primary?
The primary is St. Patrick's Day, so that's a good omen,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah, there you go.
And I think I'm the only Catholic and the only Irish Catholic, so.
Right.
That's a good omen. And
who else is running against you in the primary then?
So there's a woman named Peggy Hubbard from downstate St. Louis.
Okay.
Doctor named Robert Marshall from, he ran against Pritzker in the Democrat primary for governor of the last cycle.
All right.
A doctor named Tom Tarter from Springfield. And there might be some other guy from Aurora that I really can't remember his name, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So that's it. And it's a big state, 13 million people.
Yeah.
So much territory to cover, so many places to go, lots of money to raise. It's a tough, you know, it's a tough battle, but I feel really good. You know, I analogize it to the first time I ran for office, when I ran as a Democrat, pro-life Democrat for sheriff back in 2006. And I really just trusted the process. I didn't, you know, was I going to win the primary? I don't know. Was I going to win the general? I don't know. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I didn't, you know, once you're the candidate and you're the incumbent and what have you, there's a lot of pressure.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're not, there's less pressure. But it's been nice up to this point. I haven't been, like, tightly wound and stressed out and everything else. I'm just kind of, you know, trying to sit back and enjoy the ride. Just
okay.
Grateful Dead.
Right.
So, you know, that's the way it's going.
Okay. And what's going to distinguish your candidacy from the people you're running against in the primary?
So I'm the only one that's held elected office.
Okay.
So none of these people know what it's like to win an election.
Okay.
My county, I tell people, is not purple, it's blue.
Right.
And every other Republican on the ballot in Lake County lost by about 30,000 votes.
Okay.
And I lost by 137 votes. So I lost in the worst Democratic cycle in the history of Lake County.
Yeah.
In Lake County, Trump lost by 20.5 points.
Wow.
In Illinois, he lost by 16 and a half points.
Okay.
I would say if you win in Lake County, you know, as a Republican, you can win anywhere. The state is no bluer than Lake County.
Right.
So it becomes a question of just taking the show on the road and moving. So what else distinguishes me? Well, you know, I've run an office of 600 people, 8 different unions, bargaining units I had to deal with. I have a much broader array of experience.
And you're very, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah. I want to listen because yeah. a lot of our listeners, of course, are very much committed to the life issue, and you are 100% pro-life, and
yeah.
I do think that is worth mentioning.
Right. No, I mean, I have Bonnie Quirk on my, you know, campaign committee right at the top, you know, Ralph Rivera, you know, I've talked to him, and I've talked to... You know, all these other people, Irene Napier and
right.
and David
Avignone. Yeah,
Avignone.
Sure.
And, you know, it just seems like there's the life issue. I should have all the support up here.
Oh,
and
sure.
that's the other thing is I'm north of I-80. And I was
so for
the
people,
Lake
we have,
County.
We do have listeners who are not from the state. So talk about what that means
right.
for people who aren't familiar
so,
with the state.
There's 13 million people living in Illinois, but about 10 million of them live north of I-80. And the north of I-80 is really where all the votes are, the bulk of the votes are, and that's where, you know, that it's important in the general election that you're able to do well north of I-80 to win an election.
Okay.
And I was Lake County Sheriff, but as Lake County Sheriff, I was the head of the Northern Illinois Sheriff's Zone. I was the head of the Law Enforcement Aviation Coalition. So I had sat on a lot of committees that... encompassed a lot more than Lake County. I was an attorney general, supervisor criminal with Jim Ryan, and
okay.
I ran the circuit, tried cases all over the state. And I think I was prominent enough in Lake County that essentially all the Collier County people know who I am.
Okay. All right. And that's certainly, so you have name recognition, that's significant. But in terms of your positions on the issues, insofar as you have you're aware of them with your opponents in the primary. Do they differ at all with your commitment to protecting human life and certainly and protecting religious liberties, which is becoming just as important an issue, frankly?
I'd say I think one of them said that they're pro-life.
Okay.
You know, but ultimately, I have a record being pro-life. I mean, I was the I was the first elected in Illinois to endorse James Martyr over Mark Kirk.
Okay.
Basically
good for
on
you.
The life issue. And I mean, consistently I did things like that.
Yeah.
And you look at marriage, you know,
yeah.
my state representative flip-flopped on marriage and wouldn't defend it.
Yep.
And
that goes back to our early conversation.
Right. There was
about,
a demonstration yeah. in front of his office, and I was the only elected official there.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, people know that I've been there for a long period of time. You know, I've emceed Right to Life events.
Right.
People know who I am. They know where I stand. And they know that, you know, I just didn't tell people I was pro-life today, that I've been pro-life essentially my entire political career before that.
Right. And so it's not just you sort of have the position for a political purpose. You've been very involved in the movement in so far as, you know, you've been at pro-life events. I think that's how we met. I think I met you at one of the marches or something like that. You know, I know you're
right.
very much committed. I know you're very much committed to your Catholic faith. Can you talk a little bit about that particular aspect of your faith? So service, government service as part of faith. You know, it's interesting. I just finished reading Carrie Severino and Molly Hemingway's book on Justice Kavanaugh, on the Kavanaugh, the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and the disgrace that was. And, you know, and I went in with a very open mind. I have 3 young daughters. I do not in any way, shape, or form condone sexual assault, sexual harassment of anyone. You know, I feel like I've been in positions myself where I've been a victim of that sort of thing, not a rape or anything, but you know what I'm saying? Any woman of a certain age has had somebody catcall them or has somebody, you know, attempt to, you know, pat them on the rear end or whatever, you know, just violations of the dignity of women. I take that very seriously. So when I was listening to the hearings, I went in with a very open mind and I really came out not believing her. I think somebody probably did harm Christine Blasey Ford. I don't think it was Brett Kavanaugh. And but the authors of this book go into great detail. But, you know, Kavanaugh is a Catholic. He volunteers at Catholic charities. He has for years. He coaches his girls' Catholic grade school basketball team. So very much saw his work as a judge, you know, as part of his Catholic commitment to service, right? That but they talked about how the brutality of that campaign against him might detract others from even bothering. So yeah. Talk to me about that. Like, does that bother? Do you worry about that at all?
What I would say is, you know, my wife, she has three boys, and so she sees it from that perspective that, you know, just because somebody alleges something doesn't mean that it's true.
Right.
And, you know, I was a prosecutor all those years, and I saw so many women lie in order to gain an advantage in a divorce or, you know, all kinds of different motivations.
Disgraceful.
So human beings are human beings. Human beings lie. You know, I believe that's like you got to be an idiot to actually think that way.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, our Savior died on the cross.
Right.
And, you know, I'm staring at a cross right there with his the nails puncturing his arms and legs. And so, you know, we're called to suffer. I you know, even Brett Kavanaugh, I'm glad he got confirmed, and I was 100% with him, and I totally agree that Christine Blasey Ford was not honest.
Yeah,
and,
or you know what, she's misremembering.
Well,
I feel sorry for her. I think she's a troubled person.
I mean, she had a very partisan background.
Oh, absolutely. And then her social media pages were all scrubbed. That was one of the things. Molly Hemingway and Carrie Severino, and listeners, I would really recommend this book, had access to more than 100 people with inside information about what happened during that whole campaign against Kavanaugh.
But in any event, you know, whether you believed her or not, I don't think there was enough evidence there to say that you believed her.
Right.
I mean, she denies, he says, you know, she had ample motive to lie. So I don't know how people walk away. You know, there were Republican senators who were asked, you know, well, I believe the victim, you know, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. Why do you believe her? You know what I mean? On what? So then you think that the Justice Kavanaugh is lying. I mean, you know what I mean? I just don't know why they're so quick to cave on that. But Kavanaugh, like, at some point said something along the lines of that, you know, he couldn't get his reputation back.
No.
And this, that, and the
and
other.
And he will never have his, not entirely.
I disagree.
Yeah.
I disagree. So, you know, ultimately.
Well, look at Clarence Thomas.
So,
you know,
Clarence Thomas, a great book, is My Grandfather's Son.
Correct.
And Clarence Thomas is an icon in Catholic circles and in religious conservative circles. And amongst the people that actually matter, Clarence Thomas has a very elevated status in life. So, you know, Brett Kavanaugh as well. I mean, that's the thing with judges a lot of times, that they don't know what it's like to be a politician. I mean, I'm sorry. I get lied about all the time. I get attacked, you know, like crazy. You know, all kinds of things are thrown out there. And that's just the reality of the political climate. So you want to be on the Supreme Court? I'm glad you do. I'm glad you stepped up. But, yes, you're going to, in Senate confirmation hearings, you're going to be attacked and persecuted. You know, toughen up.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as your family, I mean, especially Catholics should be able to get this. I mean, look at St. Thomas More, you know.
Right.
When you step up for your family, God will reward you by taking care of them. So don't, you know, sit there and, you know, woe is me, somebody said something bad or they're accusing me or what have you.
Well, yeah.
It's all BS. Yeah,
right.
You know it's BS, but don't, you know, suck it up.
Right.
That would be my advice to him.
So here's something before, and we're just in the last couple minutes of the show. This always flies by, but I want to talk to you about this because you're, who will be your opponent, Dick Durbin, in the general when we get there, because I feel God has his hand on you, Mark, and you are going to win this primary. But in his questioning of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who is a friend of a friend of mine, so I'd like to think of her as my friend, but we're not really friends. I can't go that far and say that. But she, you know, Catholic judge, part of an ecumenical lay organization called the People of Praise that was founded by Cardinal George. And Durbin's questioning about her Catholic faith, if you just, as we're wrapping up, can you quickly comment on that?
Right. I mean, so Dick Durbin doesn't take his Catholic faith seriously, so he sees somebody that does, and that's a threat to him and everything else. And I think it's as much a threat to him as a U.S. senator as it is to him as somebody that's going to have to face God someday.
Well, and I hope he has to face you in the general election, Mark.
You.
So thank you for being with
us. Thanks so much. Appreciate
listeners.
It.
Okay, it was great to have you with us, listeners, and please do join us again next week. Goodbye and God bless you. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
So sit on the fence. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed. is strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.